Welcome, and thank you for joining us for this edition of This Week in State Tax podcast, also known as TWIST. My name is Harley Duncan, and I'm with the state and local team in KPMG's Washington National Tax. On today's edition, we are going to discuss an upcoming Illinois tax amnesty. When tax amnesties began about 40 years ago, they were generally billed as a one-time only offer. They've subsequently become a rather consistent aspect of the menu of options from which states choose when they begin to address fiscal challenges. The merits and demerits of amnesties as a policy will be debated, but I think most observers would agree that they can provide taxpayers with an excellent opportunity to clean up some outstanding errors at a discount, as well as provide the states with an influx of receipts at the same time. To discuss the upcoming amnesty in the land of Lincoln, we have with us Drew Olson and Brad Willemson. Drew and Brad are managing directors in our Chicago office at KPMG, and they have over 40 years of SALT experience between them. Brad served as the KPMG State Tax Resource Network individual on income and franchise taxes in Illinois and Wisconsin, while Drew was our lead indirect tax STRN in Illinois and the city of Chicago. Just to refresh your memory, our state tax resource network consists of KPMG professionals in each state with an in-depth knowledge of the law and procedures in their respective states, as well as having working relationships with key tax authority professionals in the state. So with that, Drew, how about we start with you? Can you provide us with some of the specifics of the amnesty, such as who's eligible, what taxes are covered, what are the benefits, and what's the taxpayer supposed to do if they want to participate?
Yeah, thanks, Harley. I appreciate you having me here today. The Illinois amnesty, or the upcoming amnesty, is covering basically all taxes administered by the Illinois Department of Revenue, leave aside the motor fuels tax. So it is a very broad program, and it covers all tax liabilities after July 1st of 18, but before July 1st of 24. So any taxes that were due during that time frame would be eligible. Again, leave aside the motor fuel tax. Eligible participants are effectively anybody that has a tax liability due. If you're under audit, whether the audit's closed or not, that is an eligible liability. If you underpaid a tax and you've been sitting on it for a while and you reserve for it, now is the time to come forward and pay. The only parties that are not really eligible for the amnesty are anybody that's in criminal or civil litigation currently. And the benefit of doing this program is that the state will abate all penalties and all interest.
I sit there with an outstanding liability, and I want to take care of it, get rid of the penalty and the interest. What do I need to do?
Basically, you just need to make a payment during the amnesty period, which I should also say runs from October 1st of this year through November 17th of this year. So effectively, any taxes filed during that time frame that cover the amnesty period after July 1st of 18 before July 1st of 24 will be presumed to be an amnesty payment. And the department's asking, instead, if you're going to pay for multiple periods, it's probably best to pay for each period for which a liability was due, as opposed to just paying one payment for, say, 20 months. It's better to make 20 individual payments. It may be a little bit of an inconvenience, but it'll make it easier for the department to administer. So effectively, anything that is paid during that window will be presumed to be an amnesty payment.
I got it. So has the department put out information at this point?
Yes, ironically, this morning. So there is a webpage. So if you go to the Illinois Department of Revenue's webpage and just type in amnesty in the search feature, it'll take you to a webpage that has all the information related to the amnesty that is available after October 1st. And there are links and explanations on how to make payments. There's explanation as to exactly who is eligible. It walks through examples that if you're under a current audit that's not closed yet, that you can go ahead and file amended returns and make payments, and those will be amnesty eligible. It even goes so far as to tell you that if you've overpaid an estimated liability, like I just spoke of, like an audit where you're making an estimate, you're eligible for a refund. So if you make an overpayment, you just need to apply for a refund after the amnesty is closed, and you can get a credit towards your account. There's actually also a very good informational bulletin. There's a link to that as well.
Very good. Thanks for that, Drew. Brad, how about you now? Can you bring us up to speed on some of the common questions that always seem to come up in terms of what do I do if I'm under audit? What do I do if I've protested the liability? What if I'm at various stages of protest? Nuances there, because I'm not just going to send in a payment and assume the department's going to get it allocated correctly. Anything special there?
Yes, thanks, Harley. If a taxpayer is under audit, then they can work with their auditor to determine an estimate of the liability and pay that. And as Drew mentioned, if that ends up being overpaid, then the taxpayer will receive a refund amount, but interest will not be paid on that overpayment. If you've got an amount under audit that's being appealed to the informal conference board, that procedure also applies. Work with your ICB conferee to determine if a payment can be made. In addition, if you are going to make a payment of multiple liabilities at once, which is not the recommended method, as Drew mentioned, to keep things clean and determine what liabilities they're associated with. But if you do make a single combined payment, you should include detail indicating each eligible tax liability, along with an indication of the tax type, tax period, and the amount of each liability that's covered by the combined payment. In addition, while one of the benefits is noted in the bulletin of the participating in amnesty is the waiver of penalties and interest, if you don't have outstanding tax liabilities but only owe penalty and interest, then the taxpayer is not eligible for amnesty. There are a few penalties that can't be waived. For example, lien filing and lien release fees aren't covered, but the common late filing and late payment penalties are covered by the amnesty program.
Interesting. So if I'm just, say, at the ICB that I'm a bit familiar with the informal conference board, I've protested it, I want them to take a look at it, and I decide to dispose of it during amnesty, I should consult with ICB, get clearance, make sure we know on the numbers, then make the payment, and the rest takes care of itself?
Exactly. In a way, it's like making a deposit with the department towards your liability. If you're refunded an amount, there won't be interest computed on the amount that you're refunded. If you're underpaid, there would still be penalties and interest on the amount by which you're underpaid, but it gives you the opportunity to get the benefits of amnesty for a liability that may still not be completely finalized.
Got it. You said one thing, and I had read this earlier this morning, and I thought, that doesn't seem right. If all I owe is penalty and interest, that's not eligible for amnesty. But if I did have some amount under amnesty, I get relieved of my penalties and interest. Does that seem right?
The amnesty program is tied to a taxpayer filing a return that was outstanding or amending a return that has been filed to report a different liability. So I think that's connected to the focus on the penalties and interest related to those additional liabilities that are being paid to the department.
Yeah, securing receipts for liabilities that hadn't already been paid.
Exactly.
How about, Brad, we stay with you. The amnesty programs were part of the legislative session this last year, and unlike sometimes, it seemed like most of the legislation in Illinois this year was on the corporate income tax side. Can you hit a couple of highlights of that? Because I know people were certainly interested in them at the time.
Sure, Harley. For tax year 2025, there are a few significant changes. One change is the exceptions to the add back that requires an add back of interest or intangible payment deductions when that payment is made in an 80-20 company. And an 80-20 company is either a wholly foreign operating company or could be a domestic company that has significant operations in foreign jurisdictions. And there have been, up to this time, four exceptions to that add back. The subject to tax exception, saying that the recipient, the 80-20 company, is being subjected to tax in the other jurisdiction on the income that I'm paying them, that exception is removed. The arm's length exception, indicating that the payment is being made at market rates, and therefore we can not be concerned about the deduction that's on that Illinois return, that's also been removed. So we're left with a conduit exception when you've made a payment to the 80/20 company that the 80/20 company is paying on to another third party, thereby establishing that it's at a market rate, and exception for an unreasonable adjustment. There's a potential for taxpayers to claim those exceptions. Taxpayers are currently working to understand that unreasonable adjustment exception and what the scope of that would be and if that can apply to them. Another major change is to how Illinois is treating GILTI income, which will be known as NCTI income going forward based on the changes in the OB3 provisions. That has been treated up to this point like it was a dividend from a foreign entity, or Illinois treats sub F the same way in offering the recipient a subtraction for that foreign dividend or deemed dividend or GILTI amount that was tied to the ownership percentage of the recipient in the CFC that was causing this income to be included. Now, for the GILTI income, that subtraction is limited to 50% of the amount of the GILTI income that the recipient is recognizing. Illinois already has add-backs for the GILTI and FDDEI, which will now be known as FDDEI going forward because the OB3 provisions. Illinois already has add-backs and will maintain add-backs for those deduction components. So we're just talking about the gross GILTI amount. That will now be taxed regardless of ownership in a CFC at a 50% level. Illinois is also moving on from a Joyce method for apportionment to a Finnegan method in computing the sales factor numerator, which means that now for a unitary group entity, it's going to show an Illinois numerator even if it doesn't itself have Illinois nexus if that entity has Illinois sales. That's also going to apply to throwback for tangible personal property sales and throwout for the denominator for sales of services, where if any entity in the group has nexus in another jurisdiction, those throwback or throwout rules would not apply. One final change having an immediate impact. It's effective for tax years ending on or after June 16, 2025. Gains from the sale or exchange of shares in a subchapter S corporation or of an interest in a partnership, other than if you're holding an Illinois qualified investment partnership, that's not under this rule. But if you're holding an S corp or a partnership interest and you sell that interest, that gain is now going to be allocable to Illinois if the pastor entity itself was taxable in Illinois using a blend of the current and prior 2 year factors. And that applies when the income is treated as non-business income and also for the sales factor if that gain is treated as a portionable business income. So a lot of different provisions to be thinking about going forward that could impact taxpayers' liabilities in addition to the impact of various provisions on tax periods that may create a liability that could be disclosed under amnesty.
All right. Well, thank you, Brad. So, Drew, playing ping pong here, let's go back to you.
Okay.
I also understand the legislature created a special amnesty for remote sellers that does not begin till some point in 2026. As I read the bill, it struck me as quite novel, and I think it's something in which other states will be keenly interested in seeing what Illinois achieves through this. Can you bring us up to speed on that? And knowing that we likely need to come back to this on another podcast once the department provides some further guidance, but just give us what we know about this remote seller amnesty and what they're trying to do.
Yeah, no, Harley, when I first read the bill too, I thought it was odd that they're going to wait until 2026 in order to do this, but the more I've been looking at it, it's starting to make a little bit of sense. For starters, the Department of Revenue is offering a amnesty program for remote sellers. And those same remote sellers can participate in the amnesty we discussed earlier in the podcast. But if they choose to wait, and there may be reasons they want to choose to wait, they can participate in the amnesty that's going to be offered next summer. And the amnesty period is going to run from August 1st through October 31st. And the amnesty period is actually a little bit different. It's covering all liabilities incurred after January 1st of 21 and through June 30th of 26. So if you are a remote seller that has liability after 7/1 of 24, that liability wouldn't be covered by the current amnesty, but would be picked up by the remote seller amnesty. And the reason I think they're doing this is that January 1st of 2021 Illinois changed its sourcing rules. Illinois has always pretty much used an origin-based sourcing methodology for sales tax. And prior to January 1st of 21, remote sellers were able to just charge the 6.25% use tax. After January 1 of 21, remote sellers and marketplace facilitators were required to charge destination rates. And a destination rate in Illinois could be up to 10.25%. So if they weren't collecting tax, or they were collecting the wrong tax rate by just collecting the use tax, now they're able to participate in the amnesty next summer and true up their returns and pay that additional liability, that delta between the 6.25%. That's the main benefit of the other amnesty program for remote sellers. And of course, they'll be abating penalties and interest.
Interesting. So it's not remote. I suppose it could include remote sellers that hadn't ever registered, but this is those that had difficulties dealing with the, at least certainly one target is those that have been caught moving from origin to destination and not being able to capture that local tax appropriately. So they're going to then go to some sort of simple single rate.
Yeah, no, thanks for bringing that up, Harley. In order to make it a little easier to administer, because Illinois has somewhere between, depending on how you want to count them, 1,500 and 3,000 different taxing jurisdictions. They're layered on top of each other, so there's not really 3,000 separate tax rates. But in order to make this simple, during the amnesty period, instead of having to determine your destination rate, they're offering a simplified rate of 9%. So if you only collected 6.25%, and that's what you remitted, or you didn't remit, you would just apply 9% to your gross receipts for all normal sales. When I say normal sales, Illinois has a bifurcated rate. So for qualifying over-the-counter drugs and legend drugs and food, there is a lower rate of 1% to 2.25%, depending upon where your destination is. And for the qualifying food, and certain TPP, which is going to be the, you know, over-the-counter type items, they're offering a 1.75% rate. So in order to make this program easy for remote sellers to participate in and not have to determine all of their destination rates, all they need to have is their sales into Illinois and then apply the high rate for regular tangible personal property or the low rate for qualifying food and over-the-counter type medicinal drugs.
Well, that'll be interesting. I've always just been interested in efforts to simplify the rate structure because, yes, it can be automated, but that's only part of the ball game. So it'll be really interesting to see how this one works for Illinois. So before we close out, let me just ask both of you if there are other things going on in the sales tax or the corporate tax area that our listeners should be aware of. So, Drew, you want to start anything else in the sales tax area besides amnesties that we should be aware of?
Yeah, there are two things that immediately come to mind. One of the big changes Illinois did with the last legislative session is for economic nexus purposes for sales tax. Illinois was a traditional state. You had to have $100,000 of revenue or 200 transactions. With the most recent legislative period, they did away with the 200 transactions. So effective 1/1/26, it'll only be a $100,000 threshold that you have to exceed in order to have nexus in Illinois. They did away with the 200 transactions. The other big development is with the sourcing rules I talked about that went into effect 1/1/21. That was only for the retailer's occupation tax, our traditional sales tax. If you're a service provider that transfers tangible personal property incident to the service you're providing, you don't fall under the ROT. You fall under the service occupations tax. And that also created some confusion because I have clients that are selling at retail but are also service providers. So they had to have two different sourcing methodologies. In order to be consistent, effective 1/1/26, Illinois is moving to destination sourcing for all sellers into the state, whether you are a retailer under the ROT or a serviceman under the service occupation tax. So effective 1/1/26, the SOT will also be on a destination sourcing for remote sellers.
Thank you. That'll be interesting to observe as well. Brad, Anything on the corporate side?
I've got one as well. Listeners associated with entities formed legally as corporations, along with Illinois income tax amnesty or the other amnesties for taxes administered by the Department of Revenue, should also consider the upcoming amnesty periods for Illinois franchise tax. The Illinois franchise tax is not administered by the Illinois Department of Revenue, so this amnesty program is separate from the program we just have gone through. The Illinois franchise tax is administered by the Illinois Secretary of State. Like with the Illinois Department of Revenue taxes, there have been prior amnesty programs offered by the Illinois Secretary of State, most recently in 2009. The upcoming amnesty will be for tax periods ending after June 30th, 2019 and up through June 30th, 2025. Applications for that amnesty start October 1st, 2025, and the period ends in November 15th of 2025. Some common issues with Illinois franchise tax filings to review for, which could potentially be disclosed during this amnesty period, include prior mergers that weren't already reported, and also increases to stock or paid in capital values that go into the Illinois franchise tax base, and that can be related to contributions made by parent corporations or is connected to issuances of stock, including preferred stock by the corporate entity.
Well, thank you, Brad, and thank you, Drew, for participating in our podcast today. If people have questions, they have your contact information and should by all means reach out to you. As Chicago residents, I know you both think the world centers around the city that works, as Studs Terkel once wrote. But did you know that Illinois was actually a spinoff of the Indiana Territory? As people became interested in Indiana becoming a state, they spun off the Illinois Territory in 1809, and the first capital was at Kaskaskia, a French trader village in southern Illinois along the Mississippi River, populated mainly by Kaskaskian Native American tribe members, a part of the Illinois Confederacy. All people wanted from Illinois at that time was the rich farmland to get there, and most importantly, access to the river to ship their goods. It wasn't until railroads became a thing that Chicago became important. Ultimately, Illinois did become a state in 1819, and with the capital still at Kaskaskia. It adopted its first constitution, which contained the infamous Uniformity Clause, which still bedevils people today. Kaskaskia, on the other hand, has faded away a bit. According to the 2020 census, it had 21 residents and was accessible via land only from the Missouri side of the river to various floods on the Mississippi over time. So Illinois has a long and strong history. For our listeners, thank you for joining us. We hope you'll join us on future podcasts. Thank you.